Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code program.
Hello and welcome to Oh Brother, a podcast about Salford / Manchester's legendary music institution, The Fall. As you know, you can find us at Spotify, Apple and all the usual suspects. But if you're interested, we're hosted at play.acast.com/s/Oh Brother. Of course, you can also get the episodes on YouTube. If you search for Oh Brother Podcast, you can even subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. For this penultimate episode of this season, we were highly gratified, as you'll hear, to welcome Tim Burgess. And I will be listing some of his myriad achievements in a moment. But given his ridiculous schedule, I really have to emphasise how grateful we were to agree to join us. And as you'll hear in a minute, it was an absolute joy.
Of Oh Brother with me, Paul Hanley, and my brother and colleague, Mr. Stephen Hanley. Morning, Steve.
Hello. Morning. Morning. Yeah. I'm okay, thanks. Yeah.
Good. So, yeah. I'm all right, yeah. So, I normally say that we're delighted to introduce. I mean, I definitely am delighted. I'm just trying to think of different words for delighted than I am highly gratified to introduce our guest today, musician. Singer-songwriter, record label owner, author, lead singer of the, as it says on Wikipedia, lead singer of the alternative rock band The Charlatans, and probably more importantly, one of the heroes of lockdown, thanks to the listening party, which was an absolutely fantastic initiative. Still going, of course. And without further ado, good morning, Mr. Tim Burgess. How are you, Tim? You all right?
How are you doing? Good to be here. And thanks. I'm delighted too. Or gratified. No, whatever the other word he said was.
I think it was highly gratified, I think.
I'm highly gratified too. But thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So while we're on the subject of the listening party, briefly, I've got an admission here that you've not had on yet, and I'm quite surprised because he was born in the same... Well, he was born in Northwich, which you weren't born in, but you lived in for quite some time.
Yeah.
Mr. Rupert Holmes, the lead singer of who sang the Pina Colada song, Escape, he was born in Northwich. How come you've not had him on?
I don't know, but I do love some of his songs. Yeah, I do, yeah.
I only know that one, really.
Well, no, there's a couple of, like, really... You know, he sort of fits into the same sort of mould for me as, like, Jerry Rafferty, you know, like, really, really great crafted songs and probably about that era as well. And, you know, I didn't really like him so much at the time, but I've grown to really like him, lately. That song's brilliant, though, Pina Colada song.
It's the same setup as Babushka by Kate Bush.
What, the song?
Yeah, four horrible people all going behind each other's backs.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Three horrible people, to be fair. So she writes that in Babushka, she writes a letter to tempt her husband.
Yeah.
And then he falls for it. And he, Pina Colada song, he puts the advert in, and then his wife falls for it. They're all about each other.
Very clever, very clever. But yeah, I mean, I love the Northwich connection, and, you know, I should get him on.
You should.
Has he got albums out then, yeah?
Yeah.
No, he just did one single and never did anything else again.
Well, you could be forgiven for thinking that, could you?
Yeah, no, he's massively successful. He did loads. He's done loads of Broadway shows and stuff. He's really successful.
I know. He was on the radio recently at the interview with him.
That's what made me think of it, because they have a Pina Colada festival in Northwich.
That's right. They were trying to get him down to it.
Yeah. So all those of you listening desperate for talk of the fall, we'll just have another 15 minutes on Rupert Holmes, and then we'll probably get onto the fall at some point. So I've got it down here, and as always, when you gather information on the internet, it might not be correct. The first album you bought was 77 early years, 79, is that right?
No, that's absolutely right, yeah.
I mean, absolutely. It's an awful sleeve. You weren't attracted by the cover pictures, were you?
The back cover pictures, yeah.
You might be caught in a dark alley with them four.
I don't know why that was the first one. I mean, it's all to do with timing, isn't it? You know, but when did that come out? Was it like 83 or something like that? No, 81 probably.
Probably, yeah.
It was, you know, I probably bought it for Bingo Masters Breakout, to be honest, which is the song that I, you know, liked the most at that time. And then after that, I bought Grotesque and Slates. And then I was right in the middle then of Perverted by Language, kind of, and then the kind of, you know, the album Beggar's Banquet kind of era, yeah, after that. And that's kind of like, I mean, it's really hard to sort of like say what my favorite era of the fall would be, but it would probably be, you know, the Beggars kind of, yeah, like,
we
signed to Beggars because of the fall.
So wow. we're getting them free then, the album.
I did get a few free, actually. I'll tell you what I got. The singles from Curious Orange and Hey Luciani 12-inch and stuff like that. But, you know, I had most of them. Anyway, let me think.
That's three more free full albums than you got, Steve, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely got Hey Luciani and, There's a Ghost in My House. But I had everything up to that anyway. So
yeah. So I'm always interested talking to people who sort of came across the fall not at the beginning. When you got that 77, 79 album, was there a real difference for you between the sort of Martin era and the Mark, Steve and Craig album? Because they sound like two completely different bands to me.
So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell who was on those tracks because, it's a compilation. I mean, you know, Repetition really stood out, and Bingo Masters Breakout, it's a new thing. You know, that was that. And then I suppose after, I don't know, I suppose to jump from that to, say, Smiles and Eat Yourself Fitter, I mean, which is probably, you know, whether it was my first introduction or another introduction, you know, on the tube watching that, would be, you know, I'm jumping around eras and not really asking any question. But it's, I suppose, the way that Mark rolled his R's, kept it similar to me, but he just did it in a different way through the years, I think.
Yeah. Of course, because I'm always amazed people don't make as much differentiation, if that's the right word, between different lineups as I possibly would. You know, it sounds like glaringly different to me.
Well, I guess Hex and Room to Live for me are like really different than the first bit for me.
Yeah, I suppose so.
But I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, because when Steve and Mark and Craig came in, it's as I say, it sounds like Either the people who played on the first album have all forgotten how to play.
A
lot of that's down to the drumming, the complete change in drumming, though, isn't it? Between Carl and Mike Lee.
Maybe. But because I was looking at your top 30 on Louder Than War. You've got your top 30 Fall songs.
Wow. I mean, I'm sure that. Go on. I can't remember doing that, but I mean, I'm glad.
They're all over the place. Don't get me wrong. They're from every different era going. Okay. But we won't mention the fact that Steve's not on your number one. I was doing some maths about it. I'm on 12 of them. Fair enough. I was only in there 5 minutes. Steve's on 26, which is quite impressive.
That's quite good, isn't it? That's amazing. Yeah. What was not at number one? What was number one?
Dr. Book's Lair.
Right. I mean, I was definitely going through a phase of loving Unutterable. I mean, and I still do, you know. But I mean, I don't know what.
It's quite all right, you know. You don't have to favour the one Steve's on.
Oh no, I'm not apologising. Oh, no, like, you know, I think that if I was to pick one today, it would be, you know, My New House. So
right, okay. Hey, that's very interesting, that, because that's not even in your top 30.
Which is very interesting, because I mean, I think that just kind of goes to show, doesn't it?
A lot of people say that, don't they? It changes on day to day.
Yeah, I mean, I bet Totally Wired's probably not in there, but I mean, it would be on most days.
It's number five, Totally Wired. You spent a lot of time on this. Well, I mean, that's quite a sort of indictment, isn't it? That you can pick 30 and then ask you about it and you name a song that isn't even in the 30. I mean, that's quite, a body of work, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, I was listening to, in preparation to this, you know, this morning, I listened to Dragnet, and it was like, you know, I think on some days that's definitely my favourite, you know, Flat of Angles and, you know, Dice Man and stuff like that. I love that. And then, you know, Smile is probably my favourite of all time today.
So, when was the first time you saw The Fall live then? When was that?
Embarrassingly, 1991 or 92.
Wow. Right, so
yeah. Not super early. The Hacienda.
Right, okay.
It was Extricate when that was just coming out, or when it was out.
Yeah. Because that's, you going to the Hacienda, we touched on this before we started recording, you going to the Hacienda living in Northwich was quite the day out, wasn't it, really?
yeah, it was. Well, I mean, I lived in Northwich from the age of 7 years old. And at age 13, I started, you know, going to Manchester to Underground Market and, you know, Andale and all that kind of stuff when I was a kid. And, you know, just felt that that was where I should be. I don't know why. You know, I just felt that, you know, I should never have been moved from Manchester, and I should always have been, you know, like, you know, growing up there. And, and then when, you know, when the Hacienda opened, I was kind of like, you know, and when I first started going there, I felt it was like my, I don't know, just
spiritual home,
a place of worship or whatever. You know, I don't know. It's like just this huge wide open space that you could kind of like hide in or like watch stuff in, and you know, but I didn't see The Fall, although I had all the records, until whenever it was, 91 or 90, it was 91, it must have been, it could have been 90, but whenever Extricate came out, and I loved it, you know, it's flipping mind-blowing. But I never saw Bricks in the band, which was annoying.
All right, okay, even when she came back later on.
Even though she came back later on, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because, what you know, when the Charlatans kind of took off after that, I kind of, you know, I was just never around. You know, it's just like always just, so.
You don't strike me as a hard worker, Tim. You never seem to have much going on.
Well, you know,
he's probably done more this morning than you're going to do all year.
Agreed. Yeah. Fair enough.
I've seen you quite a few times now, like 5 or 6 times, but Royal Exchange. I saw that gig. I don't know whether.
I don't remember the Royal Exchange. When was that safe?
I don't remember the Royal Exchange.
I think it was quite late on.
Might have been
post Tuesday. Might have been post Tuesday. Yeah.
Before we move on from the Hacienda, I've got to ask something about something in your book where you reckon getting home from the Hacienda involved walking from Whitworth Street to Old Trigan train station. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we always went, I went to the Hacienda with friends from Northwich and we'd go there with the hope of meeting people and being able to stay with them, and sometimes it worked and often it didn't. Most of the times it didn't. So it would be like, you know, our new friends' flats, you know, until about 5 o'clock in the morning, and it was like, hey, you've got to get lost, you know. So at that point it'd be like, well, what do we do now? And Sundays, you know, it was really tricky to get anywhere, you know, then. So we knew that there was a train at about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning that would take us to Northwich a lot of the time. But on Sundays it was random and often they didn't show up. So we'd end up walking the whole distance, which would take us until about 4 o'clock in the morning. We would sing fall songs. We would sing, you know, we'd sing like Oh Brother, and we'd sing Creep, and it'd be just whatever the song of the time was, and we'd just, you know, probably be still quite, you know, inebriated. Yeah. But the time would pass pretty quick, you know.
Well, it's according to Google Maps, 2 hours 48 as quick as you can walk it. I mean, I don't know whether the guy's got a bit of a shift on. That seems like quite quick to me.
2 hours 48. Yeah. What, from Altrincham to Northwich or from Manchester?
No, this is from Whitworth Street to Altrincham.
Right. Well, I mean, that is someone really with. I mean, it depends which way you go, I suppose. But
and, I mean, the little guy on the little guy on the Google Maps is probably sober as well, isn't he? Let's face it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, there's not much staggering going on. Walking sideways, you know. It's sideways.
So, who else did you see at the Hacienda then?
Orange Juice, Death Cult, A Certain Ratio.
Yeah. You were looking at
Royal Family in the Poor. New Order a lot. Audio Dynamite. Big Audio Dynamite a couple of times.
I think I was at that Big Audio Dynamite, I think.
Someone peeked up on my white trousers. I had some nice white jeans. And someone peeked up on my.
That's the universe telling you not to wear white trousers.
Well, you know, it's only now and again you can get away with them, but you know, on that night, I was definitely trying to impress somebody. And
Nick Jones has got white trousers on the front, like a cover of the first. They got an album, so you probably.
I think everyone in the Hacienda that night was wearing white jeans.
Could never carry them on me. You had to wash them too often. I dread to think how bad my darker jeans were, because I have to wear white jeans for a day. They were filthy.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, did you like the Hacienda as a place to see bands?
I did, actually. I mean, because it was. I mean, it always seems to go off to me.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. I mean, people used to moan about the sound, didn't they?
I've moaned about the sound.
Yeah, I mean, I had a good sound when we played. And it's, you know, it, I mean, you know, I can't say anything about the sound now because, you know, Diane and, you know, Oz and
yeah,
they did a sterling job.
Fantastic. I mean, we've talked about Oz, Diane, Eddie on here before.
Have you?
Yeah. I mean, to the point, I think really there should be a book about them because they were central to Manchester music.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I talk to Di all the time, you know, late night on the tour bus, you know, about, you know, her experiences. I mean, just the fact that they would take the PA and set it up in all these, you know, places, even, you know, like Preston and Liverpool and, you know, and, you know, well, even down south, I think they said that they took their
PA. They took the whole PA,
We've talked with them where they did the PA every night. They took the PA every night.
That's mad, isn't it? You know, to think that you have to dismantle it and then set up and then sound check it.
That's a day's work, isn't it? I mean, we talked about it before. Mark did a deal with them whereby our gear would go with them so we could just have a minibus. But the deal was that we'd help them put the PA up.
That's brilliant.
So we were getting to the venue, lugging out the PA, putting it up, setting up the gear on stage, sound checking, doing the gig, taking down the gear on stage, then taking the PA down and then carrying it out.
Wow. I remember a particular Edinburgh Playhouse one where it was...
three floors up in it.
So Diane always tells me about, you know, the Hey Luciani gigs, you know, in Edinburgh and was it Amsterdam maybe or?
Oh, yeah, the ballet.
Yeah, the ballet that's kind of like
they did that as well. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of it's a big moment really for Fall fans, right? Of a certain age.
The biggest, wasn't it, Steve?
Well, one of the highlights of the whole thing was that doing that. But yeah, at least then we were in Sadler's Wells for 20 nights.
Wow.
You have to turn the PA down every night. Michael Clark used to help taking the PA down.
No, I'm sure.
Dropped it on his leg one night, the whole thing was cancelled.
Wow.
Well, there is that, isn't there? You've got guitarists and drummers carrying a PA up three flights of stairs. It's a bit of a risk.
Well, let's say we're a drummer because there was two of us, and let's face it, Carl wasn't exactly front and centre when it came to doling out the jobs, was he?
No.
But yeah, I mean, Oz and Di and Eddie seem to kind of run through the whole of that Manchester scene.
Yeah.
79 onwards, don't they? Because they produced, Oz produced Rose Rumble, didn't he, Steve?
He did.
Really? Yeah. I knew he'd done some production, and Di, some of her recordings are on Fall Records, aren't they?
They are, yeah. They did that Tempo House live from the Hacienda. They recorded that.
That is like just what a sound.
Yeah.
What a sound. It's flipping mad.
Well, I mean, they all sound great. If you listen to any of them, you know, the Factory Icon videos.
Yeah,
like Taras Shevchenko. Is that no? Which one? I can't remember which one the New Order one is from.
I can't remember. But
and then there's the Birthday Party one, and they all sound fantastic. But I'm not so sure it sounded that great in the room.
Right. I mean, people used to complain about it, but it was not meant to be just like a venue, was it? I suppose it was meant to be like an art project.
I mean, it did get better, to be honest. When it first opened, it was like playing in an aircraft hangar, the sound, it was just whips everywhere. And then you put a lot of baffles up after that.
But it was an amazing place to... you felt amazing when you were in there watching the band, I thought. And I suppose it was... I don't know. I mean, I always thought that maybe, say, watching Big Audio Dynamite was like a big gig. But I mean, I don't know. How many did it hold? That's the end, about 900 or something, or
I think it was about that. Yeah. I don't think it was something much more, anyway, let's put it that way.
No.
Yeah.
So how about when you first played it after going there all the time?
Well, it was just the best because Hookie was there and he was like helping us to put stuff on the stage. Vinnie Riley was taking photographs and I was like, what the fuck? It's like these two are like this is just, and Simon Waldencroft was there as well. And he was so it was just like three of my heroes, you know.
But there was always a drummer in the Hacienda, wasn't there? I think that was the rule. Like, the full drummer had to be in the Hacienda at all times. Carl used to basically live in there, I think.
Did he?
He did. Yeah. Yeah, well, his mate.
I've met loads of people who were in bands at the time, and you know, and you know, Derek from 52nd Street said that he just, you know, that when he wasn't working in the band, he'd be painting the Hacienda and stuff. Yeah. You know, so everyone had jobs. Yeah. And I think that's just a brilliant...
Tom English used to collect the glasses, didn't he?
Yeah. What's
that? Tom from the Inspirals, he used to work there collecting glasses.
Collecting the glasses.
That's when amazing. He first moved. It's just amazing. You know, it's like that kind of... you know, there's like there's always a job for the lads.
Yeah. I mean, it was a real kind of scene, that, wasn't it? I mean, I know there's a lot made of it in 24-hour party people, but it did kind of... I mean, even Mark, who moaned about it a lot, but he was in there quite a bit. Certainly, he went to most places.
I like the fact that he was moaning about it.
Well, he always did, didn't he?
That's so funny.
Well, when Manchester band started, he kept protesting he was from Salford.
Yeah. Well, my dad used to say that I was from Salford. So. Yeah,
he wasn't. But anyway, that's a different story. But then when Manchester took off completely, he moved to Edinburgh.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I'm an Edinburgh man. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we touched on, where was it? What album was it? Oh, Extricate. You were at the launch party for Extricate, weren't you?
I was at the pub. I was the first one there. But, you know, I was excited, and well, I wasn't the first one there. Mark was the first one there. He was at the bar, and we had a natter. Can't really remember what was saying there, but he was always kind of like quite kind to me, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't remember what we said at that first meeting, but I do remember when I met him at the Ramada, and he was at the bar, and I was talking to him a little bit, and he said, oh, you were at Glastonbury last night, and I said, yeah, and he goes, oh yeah, I watched it on the telly, and I was like, yeah, and I was just waiting for him to sort of like say something, you know, bad, and he said, you were the best band on it, and I was like, I was like, oh, yeah, that's I'm going to keep that one, you know, in my memory for however long ago it was. So 95 that was, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Paul, were you not at the Extricate launch then?
No, I think my invite must have been lost in the post, Steve. maybe there was a postal strike or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
So did Paul, you know, like, you know, you know, you were in and out for, you know, little bits and, you know, and, you know, played on some, you know, amazing records. And but then when, you know, like, so at Extricate time and you weren't in the band, were you still like friends or something, or was it not like that?
Well, I mean, I had no choice but to be friends because when Steve was in the band. So I used to go to most gigs in when they played Manchester, because obviously Craig was a big friend of mine.
Well, Craig, I mean, yeah, Craig, I always think about him because he was an astonishing player, wasn't he?
He was an amazing player, yeah. He still is, I have no doubt about it, but he's not that inclined to play anymore, which is a shame.
Right. Oh.
But yeah, so...
What does he do? Does he just, like, hang out? And
He's a retired man now, living on his earnings, most of which probably didn't come from the fall, I would imagine.
Right.
He should play to himself, but
yeah,
I'd love to see him do more. But you know,
we did try and get him, didn't we? For that album we've just done.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Was he just like being shy?
Yes,
yeah, so
he's quite a shy individual, to be honest. So the thing I remember, I used to go back, and sometimes it was all right, but towards the end of Steve's time. I kind of tried to avoid it because the atmosphere was just terrible. I remember going to see him at Sankey Soap, I think it was, and the atmosphere backstage was absolutely toxic.
Wow. Was that just, do you think sometimes that's because everyone had known each other for so long? And
yeah, there was a lot of that, yeah. There was like, people say that you got four people there who are sick of the sight of each other.
Yeah, yeah. I understand that, you know, just through life experience, you know. I suppose it was kind of like, I mean, the amount of work that you've both, you know, done, I mean, must be quite rewarding though, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, massively. To look back and look records you're on is incredible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
I mean, that must be even more, at least for you, that, you know, it's great to look back and say, I've done all of that, you know. It'll take you a while to look back and say, I've done all that, because you've done quite a lot, haven't you?
I don't know. I mean, I have a sort of, a weird relationship with stuff that I've done. I just kind of, I mean, I don't really look at it, really, for some reason. I just kind of, like, try to just keep working out what I'm going to do next, you know, and that's a place that I always get really kind of like quite nervous about, you know, what next, and it's kind of, you know, figuring that out takes up all my time, and I never really get the chance to look at what I've done, but hopefully one day. But no. I mean, you know, what was it, if you don't mind me asking you some questions, but what was it like with you know, Wonderful and Frightening World of, you know, that kind of time? That to me is, I don't know, today, let's say today, that's my favorite album.
Yeah.
What was that like? I mean, you're both playing together, and there's like, you know, Gavin Friday was involved, and, you know,
they were great sessions on
Old Grey Whistle Test, and all that. Mm. I mean, that was just, must have been like the crystallized moment, right?
It was. I mean, the weird thing about that is, sorry, Steve, you start.
Carry on. Go on. What were you going to say?
It was amazing because signing to Beggars, it was like kind of opening the curtains in a way. It was like,
there
was money, the studios were fantastic. And it was kind of like, actually, you know, this is what being in a band should be like, really, for me.
It's kind of what you always imagine, yeah.
Yeah. Decent studios, decent hotels. I mean, I know that's, you know, nobody was asking us to carry the PA anymore. but I mean, John Leckie, you know, working with John Leckie, he basically worked with everyone, you know. But the weird thing is about that it was like, this is what being in a band should be, and we've got money and it's going really, really well. We both left. But by the time we did that Old Grey Whistle Test, me and Steve were both out of the band and came back just to fulfill that commitment.
Really?
Yeah.
It's mad.
But then you were back in on the next one, right?
Steve was, I was.
So you just didn't go back? Or?
I didn't know. Because, yeah. I mean, what it was, it's a weird thing with the Fall. The reason I left the Fall is because I got to start thinking I should be in a band with that's more about me. You know, because I'm the best one in the world. This is Mark's band, and I'm just playing the drums in it, which is, you know, because when you're young and daft, you start thinking I should be doing more. But then the reason I wasn't doing more because I wasn't talented enough to do any more than that. But then once I left and I went back to do some recording, I just thought I can't be arsed with the hassle of this anymore. It was great just going back and just being a sort of paid musician to play on the Fall, because there was no pressure at all then. Because there was quite a lot of pressure being in the Fall, Steve. Do you not think?
Yeah, it's quite full on, wasn't it? There's always, right, like Tim said, you weren't thinking about what went before, you were just thinking about the next album. And it was pretty much one a year, which is some going.
Yeah. And singles in between as well.
Well, didn't you play on Cruiser's Creek, Paul, or...
No, neither of us played on
Cruiser's Creek. So that'll just give you some idea. So basically, I took four or five months off.
Yeah.
After that Old Grey Whistle Test, and in that 4 months, they toured Britain, toured America, recorded two singles, and started working on the next album all in that short space of time.
Wow. Because I mean, I suppose it's like, because you're both on the cover, right?
No, I'm not.
You're not on the cover. Okay.
I'm on the cover, but I don't actually play. I didn't actually play on the song. Simon Rogers was still filling in for me at the time.
Oh, wow.
You can tell by the bass, though, can't you, how good it is?
You can. It's great, isn't it?
And then what about Gavin Friday? How did he get involved?
The Virgin Prunes were toured with us quite a lot.
Right, okay.
And him and Mark became quite good friends.
Yeah, mate, so, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of, we kind of got on with them because they were a bit like our cousins, really. They were Dublin, so they had the same sort of life as the cat, sort of that kind of working class Dublin. We knew quite a lot about because we were second generation kind of that.
Wow.
So we got on quite well, and they stayed at our house and bought my mum some flowers and things. So my mum loved them.
Well, that's important.
Yeah. I'm completely unfazed by the fact that they were all sat around wearing dresses and everything. Once they bought them, she didn't care. Once she found out they're from Dublin, they... But he was great on that album, I thought.
Amazing. And then Stephen's song, that's a good one, right?
Yeah, that's the one, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. The working title, still working after.
That's a classic.
Wasn't
there
a Craigness on that album as well?
Craigness, yeah. Yeah. Is that another working title? Or?
Must have been, mustn't it? Because I don't think Stephen's song's about you, is it? Or maybe it is.
Well, maybe it is. I don't know. But it was just a working title with Let's Try Steve's song, and it turned into the title.
Yeah.
So, did you leave and come back then, Paul?
Sort of. I left when we both left then after that old Grey Whistle test, and then they went back, and it was just Carl, obviously, for a while.
Yeah.
And then Carl, I don't know what happened, but he started going AWOL.
Yeah.
So they had this really big gig that we were doing, and they didn't want to leave. They didn't want to leave it to chance that Carl might not turn up, because it was from Manchester with Love. It was at the Royal Court in Liverpool.
Yeah,
with New Order, The Smiths, and The Fall all playing Less Benefit for Liverpool Council. And it wasn't really a monetary benefit because they paid a fortune, I believe. But so that was quite a big gig. So Mark was a bit nervous that Carl wouldn't turn up. So he got Steve to ask me to do it. And then another drummer, he got another drummer in just in case. I couldn't do it. And then Carl turned up. So there was three of us.
Oh, my God.
And Mark said to Carl, well, you know, you said you'd gone missing, so we've got Paul in, so he's going to do it. So I ended up doing it. So that was my last gig with The Fall, was The Smiths, New Order, and The Fall.
Good. Wow, what a gig.
Not a bad gig to go out of, because...
Yeah, that's good.
New Order went on first, because obviously they had that much equipment, you couldn't move it twice. So obviously they soundchecked last, left everything on the stage, and so that's the only reason they were on first, because I'm pretty sure they were the biggest band.
Yeah.
And then we went on, and then The Smiths went on at the end.
Wow.
Good gig. I was getting a t-shirt. Somebody keeps putting the t-shirt up on eBay and things, and it's like 400 quid. I mean, I'd love to have the t-shirt, but I'm not paying 400 quid for it. It probably won't fit me anyway. But...
What about Slates and Grotesque? They were like, it kind of like came hand in hand for me, them two.
Well, yeah. Well, Grotesque was Cargo. In Rochdale. I don't know if you ever went in there, Tim, did you?
No, I didn't. Was that Sweet 16?
Yeah.
I might have had a look, because I mean it's legendary, isn't it? I might have been in there and just sort of like, went with somebody and maybe hooked it, I don't know, and sort of like just had a little look around, and then, but I'd have never recorded there.
No. So I mean that was the first thing I did, was that, because we did kind of Elastic Man and New Face in Hell were the first two things I ever did in the studio were them two. But I really like going to Cargill's. Did you see?
Yeah, it's great, wasn't it? Yeah, and when it turned into Sweet 16, it kind of got better.
Wow.
So did The Fall become Sweet 16 then?
Yeah, we did. We did a lot, yeah. You're putting me on the spot now, but we definitely...
Did Pete Hook come to them when it was 316?
Yes, he did, yeah. It was Pete Hook and Sean. Do you know Sean?
Tim? Yeah, he does sound, yeah. Chemical Brothers.
Yeah, but I mean, that
was he in Soccer Monsters as well?
He may have been, yeah. He may have been, yeah.
I can look it up. How do you spell his name?
S-I-A-N.
Watch this, I'll type it in now and it'll say he went to Stockholm. Yeah, no. Hang on. Talk amongst yourselves. What did people do before the internet?
Oh, what about looking stuff up? I have music magazines.
I still try and read music magazines. I must admit, them and film magazines, I never really. I can read, get me news off the internet, and I don't mind watching TV on the internet. But
yeah,
when it comes to reading about music and films, I like to have a magazine in my hand.
It's nice. I mean, the weeklies though were good, weren't they? Making all that sounds. That was good. Good times. That's where I used to get, because my mum used to work in a paper shop in a really small village outside of Northwich, and there was one copy of each of them, she used to sort of like, you know, bring one back, because only two of them would ever be sold. So it was just depending on which one wasn't sold, but you bring one back with me, it's just like the highlight of my week.
That's something else we've talked about before, is just how important the music press was, sort of. So,
yeah.
In the 70s, 80s,
it
was massive, weren't
they? I mean, I would never have heard of like Cramps or Gun Club or, you know, probably, I would probably not, well, not have heard the Fallen, well, without a record shop or music magazine. So, it's just.
They were great at Gun Club, weren't they? I saw them at the Hacienda, actually. They were fantastic.
Yeah. I remember them playing there.
Yeah, they were brilliant.
Jeffrey
Lee Pierce walked on the stage and went, "Hey man, what's happening?" And I thought, this guy's a rock star. Proper deal, line it. Leather kecks on, dive on there, fantastic.
Oh yeah, good vibes.
Yeah, because Kid Congo, who's a guitarist, he was in Hit Enough video, wasn't he, Steve?
He was, yeah, he was another. Well, they did play, again, they played with us quite a few times at Gun Club.
They were great, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
Was it Patricia? I can't think of a second name on bass.
Yeah. Morrison. Is it Morrison, is it?
Patricia Morrison, yeah. Fantastic. What a lot they were.
Yeah.
The camera reminds me of the Cramps.
Miami is my favourite record.
Yeah, brilliant.
Well, actually, the first one's brilliant. But Miami's a good one.
We're talking about getting him on, aren't we, Kid Congo? Because have you read his book, Tim?
I haven't, no. Is it good?
I haven't read it yet, but... Get him on already. I'm not paying £12 unless he's coming on. But I've read some extracts from it, and he's lived quite the life as well, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not kidding.
But a really nice guy.
What are your favourite albums, then?
What, of anyone?
The
Fall album. Yeah. I think Slates have been there, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That'll be up there, yeah.
If we're agreed it is an album, which is a bone of contention.
So were they what we'd call maybe like the happiest days?
We never got happy with it, do we?
Happy never really computes, really.
No.
Because without being funny, when we were talking a minute ago about doing, I forgot the name of the album, doing The Wonderful and Frightening World, but it was like, this is everything I thought being in a band was in, should be like, it was, you know, decent money, and I left 5 minutes later, so it was never really about happiness, really. I think the most fulfilled, should you say, would be about that period, I think, the sort of, when it was me, Steve, Mark and Craig, and then Carl.
So it's like the commitment had paid off.
To be in that band and produce, you know, be in a band with your brother and three mates and produce something you're really, really proud of. I mean, that's about as good as it gets, isn't it? I think in a band.
Yeah. That's amazing.
What about you, Steve?
Well, obviously, there's different ones at different times, and some I've got better memories of other than others. But Infotainment Scan was another one kind of like that, because that was like me, Craig, Simon and Dave Bush. Yeah. So like four mates again, all sort of writing songs and.
Is singing on that Lost in Music?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've said this before as well, and I'll probably say it on every podcast, but that for me is the best cover of The Fall ever did, that Lost in Music. I love Lost in Music.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I think it's quite underrated in terms of what he brought to The Fall, Dave Bush, I think.
Yeah. No, he's great.
Because he really kind of the sound on, didn't he?
He did. That was his idea. He said that to us when he joined. I'm going to drag you into the next century. Kicking and screaming.
Which albums do you think have been written about the most? Would you say
X? I think X. Someone could even write a book about that.
Yeah.
Somebody milked it, haven't they?
it's like such a hard listen, that one, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's it, you know, it pays off, obviously, but it's such a hard listen.
I find it incredible, because it does. You're right, it does pay off, and there's lots of going on, but it I'm surprised it went down a lot better or immediately on its release, and I think anybody thought, certainly as Mark thought, you know, he thought people were going to say, what the fuck's this? And then it got really, really good reviews and everything, which is quite a surprise, I think.
Yeah, because, I mean, and was, like, Room to Live after or before? Was that considered to be, like, you know, like a high point or...?
No, that was
very much a low point. Morale.
Yeah, right. because
X was so exhausting. Do you think, or?
Well, we did it too quick. I think it was. Right. It was like 10 minutes after we'd done X, we were back in doing somewhere else.
10 minutes.
It was done too quickly, and things weren't going well in the band at the time, were they?
Was it on the same label, though, or was it like a contract fulfillment kind of thing?
Not at all. It was the same label. Wow. And I think one of them, when we went in to do a single and ended up doing six songs or something.
Right, okay.
But it was horrible. I mean, because Mark was trying to get away from Hex, basically, so... He was doing stuff with just two people on and not telling people and all that kind of stuff, you know, then sort of trying to undermine the band, for want of a better word. I'm sure he didn't see it as undermining the band, but trying to stop people getting too comfortable because it had had such good reviews, X. I think he thought that we were all getting a bit, hey, we're great, us. Which I think we were.
Right. But you would think, I mean, you need that sometimes, though, don't you?
I don't think so. I'm not sure it's the worst crime in the world to think you're in a great band.
I don't either. So Room to Live, and then it was Perverted by Language after that. Is that right?
Yes. So that was a big change, wasn't it, Steve? Especially for you, because Mark Riley had gone then. It was obviously Steve's.
Childhood friend. So it was difficult. Yeah, but we did manage to pull it back though, didn't we? For Perverted by Language.
Mega record, so powerful, and like a commercial as well, right? In a way, you know, it's like
certain songs on it. I mean, I don't know whether part of that's because they were on the tube, those two songs, but they seem to stick out as kind of commercial, even despite themselves, like Smile.
You wouldn't say that was commercial.
No,
it's a great song.
I always think of Perverted by Language as Craig's album, really, because he was basically doing everything, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was most of the songwriting, wasn't he?
Yeah. It was me and Carl and Steve doing the rhythm section, but the only melody there was, because let's face it, Mark wasn't providing a great deal of melody, was it? The only melody there was Craig, really, and he really kind of stepped up to the plate, I think.
Right. Garden is on there, right?
Yeah, that's
another one of his.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of my... There's film of it. We've probably talked about this before, but there's film of it at the Hacienda, funnily enough.
Right, yeah.
Me and Carl playing, and that's just... That's a privilege. So, you know, if you're going to look back and say I was part of that, look back at that and you think, fucking hell, that was pretty good.
Yeah,
that's good. I did watch that recently. It did come up somehow on and the comments underneath. Bass is out of tune.
Controversial.
What was your bass, Steve? What kind of bass did you play?
I always had a Precision.
Right. I was the first bass I ever had was an Araya, and I thought it was a bit like yours, but
they were quite good then, weren't they?
Oh, amazing, got a really good twangy sound. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were quite a good copy, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah, and that was.
No, it was the Precision copy, was it?
Yeah, same shape, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
A bit twangier, I think, maybe, but I wondered because of your sound, Steve, whether it was like an Araya because for some reason, but.
On the real thing by then, really.
Yeah.
most expensive thing he possessed in the world was his bass.
It was.
I mean, there's a lot of great bass lines.
So where did you get that from, Steve? Was it A1?
The Precision, yeah. Probably still that one that I inherited from Mark Riley at the time, yeah. Because obviously, right. When I joined,
was that not a copy? That no.
No, that was a Precision.
Right.
But when I joined, he moved on to guitar, and yeah. I inherited that bass off him, which is where all the trouble started, wasn't it? When we were talking about. When we left,
whose face it was?
It got stolen out the back of the van, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yeah, that was the trigger point for us both leaving.
Yeah.
What was the feelings like with Martin Brammer and stuff? Was it all okay?
Yeah.
Did he ever like Blue Orchids?
Loved them. I thought what was great about them is that they weren't. Like the Fall, do you know what I mean? They were kind of spacier, weren't they, and more psychedelic.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell in some ways, I think, some of the vocals, obviously, but.
If you like Fall similar music with Martin Brammer singing, you should check out House of All.
Right, nice. If they want to do a listening party, they should.
Oh, yes. Whoa. Oh, go on then. Yeah. You might get that. Well, we'll take your hand off for that, Tim, if you want one.
Of course.
Yeah. The album comes out on the 23rd of March.
Okay, great.
Does it?
So,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, keep right. It going. Because, yeah. The Grotesque and Slates one was fantastic, wasn't it? And then...
We did four, did we?
Well, definitely did Wonderful and Frightening World of Slates, Grotesque. Slates. Not Hex. Sure, though. Hex,
That was a great one, the Abbey Road. Ben Sinister.
Oh my God, yeah.
That was amazing.
That was fantastic. That was a really good night.
And it was good to see John Leckie as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. Yeah.
His memory was pretty good.
Incredible. We had him on the podcast and he remembers everything, which is just, I said to George Harrison, we talked about when we were in the studio. So when I was in the studio with him, I don't know whether it got better later on. We never. I mean, if you're in the studio with John Leckie now, you'd sit 2 inches away from him and just sort of bend his ear to get him to tell tales about the stuff he'd worked with. But we didn't, never did it, never at all. And it was kind of frowned on anyway.
Yeah. That's funny, that, isn't it? Because it was totally frowned on all through the Fall, wasn't it? Because we were in doing them Peel sessions with Dale Griffin all the time, weren't we?
I did one with him.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody ever mentioned Mott the Hoople.
Yeah, I'd never heard of him at the time. I think he was upset.
Yeah, but you were big fans, weren't you? You and Mark and Craig.
Yeah.
I love them now. I love them now, but I didn't really know them at the time. You've gone to Manchester.
No, Steve's a lot older than me.
You're
talking about old big bands, didn't you, Steve?
Yeah.
I mean, to live through Roxy Music and Bowie must have been amazing. So that's
that's
the plus of being a bit older.
Because I'm solid on them.
My first taste of music was the Vibrators, Automatic Lover.
Where was that?
I just saw it on Top of the Pops. That was like the first bit of music that really got me going. You know, it's like that, and you know, Clash, and
yeah,
you know.
Still, how old would you have been about then?
I was 11.
Yeah,
yeah, good age. Yeah. And then 16 when it was like, you know, Fall and New Order and lots of bands on Mute Records as well, you know, Fad Gadget and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's good.
It's a good time to be from Manchester then, wasn't it?
To be honest, living in the sticks, Tony Wilson really was the guy. He was the guide, I don't know how well. Obviously, he knew what he was doing, sneaking in all his favorite bands, after the Friday Night News was just amazing, you know. I don't know. He was like one of the best front men in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking to Dave Nolan, who's an author, and he's a film producer, and he works at Granada.
Right.
And basically, you kind of take it for granted being from Granada land. It's not until you see the television in the rest of, or you look at the rest of the country at that time, that you don't realise just how lucky we were to have Granada with Tony Wilson, because Granada was all your great music programmes.
Totally.
Granada, aren't they?
And then Channel 4 started doing a few good things after that, but it was always Granada. And you don't realise how kind of subversive Tony Wilson really was until, because at the time he just sort of like seemed like a normal bloke, but on the telly and stuff like that. But now when you see what he did and who he did it with, all these amazing bands at that time, including yourselves, you know, it was like flipping. I don't know.
Did you know him too?
Bringing people to, you know, bringing bands to the public eye. You know, it's just amazing.
It is. Did you know him?
I did. Yeah. I mean, not well enough because he was kind of a hero when I was growing up. I'm always a bit.
Yeah.
I just don't know where to start because I've got so much inside of me that it just all usually just all bursts out.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I spoke to him before I was in the band at the Hacienda, and he was pretty reasonable. You know, he was just happy that I was getting what they were doing and all that kind of stuff, and that I'd come from Northwich and all this kind of stuff. And then he came to see the Charlatans a few times, and he put us on. It was called Celebration, Granada Celebration, in 1990. He put us on, and I mean, it was supportive.
Yeah. Without being funny, that kind of completely transformed the city. I mean, in a sort of metaphysical sense, in a physical sense and everything, didn't it? That whole thing, that whole scene, I mean, it's completely transformed Manchester now.
Because he said, I think when the Hacienda was being built or it was in its first, you know, it was in its infancy, you know, we were saying, you know, the clubs, you know, kids have clubs in New York and kids have clubs in Paris. For there not to be a club like this in Manchester would be a detriment to the youth of today. And I was just like, fucking too right.
Yeah, all right. So you went to, was it the Underground in New York, Steve, that it was kind of based on, was it? Or the Peppermint Lounge or one of them, wasn't it? Peppermint
Lounge, I think, Yeah,
Haraz, because he obviously went over and saw that and thought we should do that in Manchester, which is quite a big step, wasn't it?
Yeah, very ambitious.
I always think that the meeting where they said, I tell you what, let's have a club in Manchester. You know, we used to have the Russell Club. Let's have a club in Manchester. Oh, I've got these premises. What the fuck? it's the least likely looking place for a club, isn't it? The fact that you'd say, let's put a club in here is just unbelievable. It was a boatyard or something, wasn't it?
It's a yacht warehouse, wasn't it?
You often get them in city centres, don't you? Yacht warehouses.
What was that doing there? A yacht warehouse in the middle of Manchester?
Presumably,
you can sail them up the river or the Cudjoe Canal.
I don't know.
There is a canal behind the hacienda, isn't there?
There is, yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe they put them all on trucks. I don't know. Let's see, you never get that in the books about the hacienda, did they? How did they get the boats in the warehouse?
And didn't I read somewhere that it should have been somewhere else? And they lost them premises at the last minute.
There's a sliding doors moment. I wonder where that was.
Somewhere. There was some other premises they were after that they didn't get.
Okay. Right, so the last thing I've got to ask you about, because we're going to wrap up now, is there's a line on your Tolwell, dressed all in white like the Fall. So is that the season, or is that the band? I don't remember the Fall ever dressed in white, did they?
What was that?
One of the lines on your album, dressed all in white like the Fall.
Dressed all in white like the Fall? No, I don't think that's the right lyrics.
Okay, there's the internet for you. Right, okay, fair enough.
I know what it says. Dressed only white like that Ford. It's a car.
Okay.
it's my accent, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it.
All those years of living in Cheshire.
Well, there you go. That's the name of the bleeding episode out the window, isn't it?
There you go.
Next to the magazine, old magazines and pictures of your family dressed all in white like the Fall. That's what you get when you look at it.
That's what I'm going to sing now on. Even though the film never wore white. Yeah, dressed all in white like that Ford. It's about a car.
Right, okay. It's going to be the name of the episode anyway now. It's better now, but it's not the actual lyric.
Yeah, I love it. Right.
Okay, thanks, Tim. That was fantastic. Good to talk all day.
Yeah, me too. And see you for a listening party, and hopefully see you both very soon.
On behalf of the grateful world, thanks very much for the listening parties. What an amazing thing to do that. Incredible.
I loved it, really. I mean, it was a lot of work, but it was just
good.
Amazing.
Yeah. All right, then. All right.
And so you're going on tour now, I'll take it.
Going on tour at the end of the month in America. Fantastic.
You took a pun on that, couldn't you? I believe you're going on tour. No, you're always going on tour.
I knew he was going on tour.
In the States. Right,
it looks great. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Take care. Thanks so much for doing that. Really, really enjoyed that.
Me too. Take care.
See you soon, mate.
See you soon. Yeah. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Old Brother. The season's final and very special episode will be released in 2 weeks. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Old Brother Show, where you can find links to our Spotify playlist. Or why not subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher and RSS, so you'll be all set for Series 4 when it eventually appears, which it will, I've no doubt about that. You can give us a rating on iTunes, subscribe on YouTube, or just tell your friends if you fancy it too. For further reading, our books about the Fall, The Big Midweek and Other Bleeding Guests are available from Root Publishers and all good bookstores. Tim's amazing books, including The Listening Party Volumes 1 and 2, are available from bookstores everywhere. New listening parties are scheduled all the time, and what a gift they are, so keep listening. Hope to speak to you all again soon, and remember, if you're driving, take your car. Ta-da!
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.